You're listening to the Men Overseas Podcast, a show that explores methods and ideas to help you live a bigger life. You will hear interesting stories of how people live, how they save and invest their money, and why having time wealth is better than being a billionaire. If you are entertained, educated, or elevated, be sure to hit the subscribe button. We're just getting started. Now here is your host, Brad D'Antonio.
Hello, you beautiful MFs. Thanks for tuning in. Today, I will talk about baseball and basketball and money stuff, some parenting stuff, and other stuff. Probably tell a few stories here and there. I'll start with funny stuff, as usual. Greg, with the numbers behind it on X, he had a couple of good ones. Actually, I'll share one of his that I liked. He said, Popeyes, two people in line takes 20 minutes to get your food. Chick-fil-A, 20 people in line takes 2 minutes to get your food. So Popeyes, two people in line takes 20 minutes. Chick-fil-A, 20 people in line takes 2 minutes. And the top comment was, yeah, but at Popeyes, you get to be treated rudely by the staff. Here's another one. This was posted by Koi Cats, K-O-I-I Cats. She says, I feel like sex is a myth because it seems so far-fetched, and how are people doing it all the time, and how do you know when to do it, and what if you didn't prepare, and how do you know if the other person wants to without being too forward and weird? Anybody want to guess her age? I don't know her age, but I have a good guess. One of the top comments was, it's all a big hoax. Big Sex just wants to sell more condoms to people who pretend they have this quote-unquote sex. I was on a road trip with a buddy one time, and he was talking about this dry spell that he was on for a long time. I think we were in our mid-20s, early to mid-20s. And he made a comment similar to what this girl did. He said, do you think people really have that much sex? He said, it's not like I'm a loser. I've bagged a babe. And some of them, they liked it. But man, when you're cold, in other words, not doing it, he said, it seems like you're never going to do it again. Why is that? So we're driving down I-10, and I said to him, I said, think of it this way. Every car we pass, that's a real-life representation of somebody having sex. It's real-world evidence. Somebody's doing it. Every single car we pass, and we were on a five-hour trip, and I said, not just every driver, every passenger, too. You see a bus, that's a whole lot of sex. And so, yeah, every car is the result of two people doing the nasty, bumping uglies, or whatever you call it. And he was like, whoa, I never thought of it like that. And I said, yeah, and just think, babies aren't the result every time people do it. Did you know it's only like 1 in 10,000 times that a baby results from sex? That's actually a low estimate. So I grokked it a few minutes ago, so you don't have to. It's actually closer to 50,000. So, come along a baby, a whole lot of boinking going on. And there's a lot of that happening, whether you're partaking or not. Here's another one from Seton Hall student. He says, you can be out of school for 2 decades and the 60 minutes ticking will make you think you forgot to complete an assignment for Monday morning. That's good. I would say the same for Hank Williams, the intro to the Sunday Night Football. That started when I was in fourth grade. And they played it till I was 30. It was on for 20 years. Speaking of being a kid, Claire on X, she said, nobody fell off harder than the hammerhead shark. Was a top shark for me when I was a kid and now completely obsolete in media and conversation. Same thing with quicksand, am I right? This one's good, but not necessarily funny. But it's good. It comes from Jake on Reddit. He said, this shutdown is bad for everyone in the service industry, but it especially sucks for men. We're losing $1 for every 79 cents women are losing. And this one might be my favorite. This is from The Chief. He says, I saw a white person on here the other day referring to other white people as Nillas, short for vanilla. And I gotta say, I'm probably gonna jump on board with that one. Nilla what? Nilla who? All right, on to more serious matters. Opening day of the NCAA tournament was last Thursday. It had record high viewership. even as the ratings for the NBA continue to collapse, college basketball seems to be doing well. I was in Lake Charles for the opener. I met my buddy Dalbar down there. We stayed at L'Auberge, which not only has a sports book where we watched the opening game, but they have heated pools there. Who knew? So that was wonderful. That is until you get out and it's freezing cold and you're shivering like a child. But we looked at the Golden, we were going to stay at the Golden Nugget, which is about a 10-minute walk down the street from L'Auberge, and it was double the price of L'Auberge. So L'Auberge was like $175. Golden Nugget was close to $350. But we had a great time. I could see doing that in future years, just going for March Madness. It was great. And you make more friends because everybody's betting in the sports book and high-fiving and commiserating when they lose. It works out great because this friend of mine, he lives in Baton Rouge, and as a lot of my friends live in Louisiana, and I'm in Houston. So Lake Charles is the perfect spot in the middle, the perfect meeting point for us. It took him just over 2 hours to get from Baton Rouge to Lake Charles, and it takes me a little over 2 hours too. Do you know what L'Auberge means in French? I have the definition here because I was curious. It means the inn or the hostel. It typically refers to a small, rustic, or charming establishment that provides lodging, food, and drink for travelers, often similar to a bed and breakfast or a guest house. That really doesn't match up, huh? Because L'Auberge is pretty big. It's nice, too. It's got a lazy river. It's just that Golden Nugget is newer, so I guess they think they can charge more money. Not a lot of upsets in the tournament so far this year. Many seem to think there aren't as many upsets as there used to be because of the transfer portal and all the NIL money. The biggest upset was probably High Point over Wisconsin, which was a 12 beating a 5. But back in the day, in years past, that would happen all the time. The first game that I sat down to watch this year after I got home from the sports book in Lake Charles was the Kentucky-Santa Clara game, which is a 7 versus a 10. And I stupidly went to get a haircut in the second half and missed that. That was probably the best finish, or one of the best, that we had. So, shame on me, but my hair looks great, so that was worth it. I saw where Tommy Tuberville is proposing a bill that would give college athletes 5 consecutive years to play 5 seasons, and you get 1 transfer. And he says that after that, if you transfer again, you have to sit out a year. And I think that's a good idea. He believes it'll fix 80% of the issues that we currently have with all the NIL stuff. I guess, I don't know if that includes a red shirt year. I don't know how that's going to be handled, but I mean, I don't even know if the legislation is going to pass, but it's a great idea. And it's interesting that a coach brings that forward who's now a senator. It's kind of cool. But speaking of, I guess he's not proposing any limits on coaches. You know, when I was coming out of high school, the JUCO that I went to, the coach left the month before I got there. So I only went 1 year to a JUCO my freshman year, and then I transferred to a 4-year school, a university. The head coach there also bolted the month before I got there. So yeah, if you're going to put an end to all the moving around for players, I think there should be limits for coaches. Because, yeah, coaches hop on the carousel too, and players get screwed. And back in my day, transferring was rare. And if I played today and had the same opportunities that I did back then, there's a really good chance I would have transferred because playing in the Big 12 was very appealing, but I didn't do it. I was just telling a buddy I had lunch with last week. He went to Baylor, and I've always been a little jealous that I didn't go to school in Texas because he's got all these college friends who are really great people and successful, and he gets to see them all the time and have lunch with them, and all my college friends live 5-6 hours away. There was another game I enjoyed watching. It was Nebraska-Vanderbilt. I also like the St. John's KU game where the little white point guard hit the buzzer beater. Did you see that? And that bucket he hit at the buzzer, those were his first points of the entire game. So there were 4 seconds left, and this is a cool story. He walks over to Rick Pitino, who is the coach, the St. John's coach, and Dylan Darling is his name, the point guard. And he runs over and tells coach what play he thinks they should run. And when the kid was interviewed after the game, they asked him what Patino said to him. And this darling kid, he says something along the lines of, I don't know what he said. I don't think he had enough time to say anything. So he runs over and takes the ball from out of bounds. And he made the shot, of course. And then when Patino is interviewed after the game, he said when Darling suggested that play for him, for himself, and ran off, he thought to himself, wait a minute, he hasn't scored any points all game, and he's going to call a play for himself? but he was overjoyed, of course, because he made the shot. And now they play Duke in the Sweet 16, and that is the first time St. John's has made the Sweet 16 since 1999. And that team had an All-American who went on to star in the NBA, guy by the name of Ron Artest. Or the guy formerly known as Ron Artest. I think he changed his name like Facebook did. He goes by Meta now. But great story. That kid, Darling, he's a lefty, and he hit that shot with his offhand. And that's the value of point guards. They dribble well with both hands. You know, something you maybe don't know about me is I was obsessed with basketball when I was a kid. It was by far my favorite sport. And I was much better at basketball than I was at baseball. But with me moving to Texas, I moved in eighth grade, and I went to this ghetto junior high, which I'm sure you've heard me talk about before, and I had this one friend, Lucas, and Lucas was very much into karate, not basketball, but he was a real cool dude. I think I have him on Facebook. He was a teenage lady killer, and him being so into karate actually benefited me because he used to like to use my face to practice his kicks. So he would whip his leg about a centimeter from my nose and then whip it back so fast. And he would always avoid kicking me in the nose, thankfully. But it got annoying after a while. And one day I was like, dude, you got to show me how you do that. I want to learn. And so he did. He taught me some technique, how to kick people in the face, and which would come in handy more than twice. So I'm grateful for that. My first day at this school, it was the day after Martin Luther King Day, Tuesday, January 18th, 94. I'll never forget it. The Rockets were like 22-0 or something. So I instantly became a Rockets fan because we didn't have a team back in Louisiana. There was no New Orleans Hornets or Pelicans yet. So LSU was pretty much their pro team. So I started rooting for Hakeem, and then thankfully Jordan retires. They win two world championships, and I still pull for the Rockets today. So I show up at this school day one, and I went to meet the coach, the basketball coach, because it was the middle of basketball season in January, and I told him I wanted to try out for the team. He says, okay, son, practice is at 3, be on the court at 2:45, and I knew that they had an A team and a B team. So I'm sitting there on the first row of bleachers watching kids who looked much older than me warm up. And because this school was so ghetto, none of the kids were my age. The best player, Juan Sosa, he was 15. The point guard, Ivan Cantu, he was 15. They had a guy named Jerome who was 6'5 or something, and he was 16. And then, is that it? Oh, Donald, he was 14. He was only a year older than me. He always wanted to fight me for no reason. That happened a lot at that age. So luckily, I learned how to kick. So, two Mexicans, two black dudes, and then I don't know who the fifth was because he didn't start after I got there, but I'll never forget the tryout. Coach calls me by my name. He says, come here, and then he's holding the basketball against his hip, and I'm following him around like a pup, and he turns around and tells me to stop right there at the top of the key, and he's kind of underneath the basket, and he walks forward to the free throw line, and he bounces the ball to me, and he says, take me to the hole, and I was thinking, is this my tryout? Is this all it's going to be? Thank you, Lord, because that was my game. I was quick and I was left-handed, and I'm sure he didn't expect me to be left-handed. So my adrenaline was through the roof as the whole of eighth grade basketball is standing there watching the A and B teams. So he bends his knees, he gets in a defensive position, and I fake like I'm going to go right. And then I just blew right past him and did one of those layups where you hit the back of your hand on the backboard, which is boss shit for a little eighth grader, right? Little white guy. I must have been about 5'7" at the time, and he takes the ball out of the net, and now he's smiling, and all he said was A-team, and he pointed to the ginormous group of thugs with mustaches that were standing over to the side. But when I got to ninth grade, I just gave up basketball. I gave it up like I hadn't invested thousands of hours of my life in becoming a better basketball player. I mean, I don't know if I was old enough for thousands of hours, but I played nonstop in the rain, in the cold. I don't know how many hours I spent playing and practicing, but it was a lot. In fact, the summer before my freshman year of high school, every day, probably very darling-like, I would dribble the ball with my right hand around the neighborhood, just trying to improve my ball handling skills. That was a daily activity for me. And little did I know, I would never play basketball again. I started attending this giant new high school called Cy Falls. We moved over the summer, so I was zoned to a different high school from the thugs that I went to junior high with, which I'm still grateful for to this day. So I didn't know anybody when I showed up at this new school. I had no friends. And I remember sitting in class, and they do the morning announcements, you know, where you say the Pledge of Allegiance, that kind of thing. And they said, tryouts for ninth grade basketball is today after school in whatever gym. The school was so big, we had two gyms. Actually, even the giant junior high I went to had two gyms. That's Texas, right? Anyway, they make the announcement, and I look down at the floor at my backpack, and I realize I don't have gym clothes. I didn't have tennis shoes. I didn't have shorts. I didn't have anything. So I never played basketball again. Pretty sad, because I loved it. But everything happens for a reason, I guess. I guess it was a few weeks later that I met Chase at the all-ages dance club called Shelter that I've talked about. And I still remember the jams they would play. They would release this white fog, you know, like they had a fog machine and everybody's dancing. I had a guy tell me whenever I do music references, he never gets any of them, except he got the Sublime one. So maybe he'll get this one too. But they played Nine Inch Nails. You Let Me Violate You. That one. And Offspring had a hitter at that time too. It was, I may be dumb, but I'm not a dweeb. I'm just a sucker with no self-esteem. Oh, yeah. So they would play those, and we were ninth graders just getting down. So that would have been the fall of 94. And I wanted to talk about Chase a minute because I saw him on TV the other night. This was crazy. I turned on a Rangers exhibition game with no sound on because I was reading a book. And so this was Monday night. And the Rangers manager walks out to the mound to tell the pitcher that he made the big league team, which was so cool, and I turned it up, and I love how the managers seem to be coming up with more and more creative ways to let the guys know that they made it to the big leagues, which might be my favorite thing. You know, I've told you that Chase, he's real good about sending me videos of some of the call-ups they have. Well, I'm watching this dude, the pitcher, Baumler is his name, I believe, and he walks back to the dugout, and his teammates are congratulating him. And I see Chase in there high-fiving him. Totally unexpected. So I text Chase and I said, just saw you high-fiving the guy who was just told he made the big league team. And Chase is actually coming to Houston this weekend. Or Sugarland, actually. Their season opener, the AAA Rangers. They're from Round Rock. They open their season down here. So I'm hoping to see him in the coming days. I'll probably release this on Friday. I'm recording it on, what's today? Wednesday. I saw a stat the other day, and this is interesting. So the number of pitches thrown in Major League Baseball under 45 miles an hour has exploded in recent years. So from 2008 to 2016, there were none. And then in 2019, there were none. There were like six in the interim there. And then in 2021, there were 64. And then 2022, 183, then 199, and then 175 in 2024, then last year, 424. And these are basically like lobs, as if you were throwing a softball pitch. And they usually come when a team is getting blown out or winning 17-0 or something. And so what they're doing is trying to save their arms, the bullpen guys, they're trying to save their arms so they don't waste them on a 17-0 game. So a lot of times they'll let a position player pitch, like Jose Canseco. And speaking of Chase, I remember him telling me he got to pitch one time for the Zephyrs in New Orleans. He was playing AAA at the time, and it was like the 17th inning, and they brought him in to pitch. And I said, what was the biggest takeaway? Because he's never pitched as long as I've known him. And he said, I couldn't believe how easy it was to throw strikes. And I had the same experience. I was coaching the Sci Falls baseball team, the high school I went to, for the summer one time. And we did an intra-squad, and I pitched. And I, of course, haven't pitched since I was probably 14 years old. And I couldn't believe how easy it was to throw strikes. It's crazy. So anyway, yeah, they saved the pitcher's arms. Remember, Jose Canseco pitched one time. But yeah, they want the position players to pitch the athletes, I call them, so as to save the non-athlete's arm. but hopefully they're driving here and not flying. I don't know if they fly private or not. But what a mess going on at airports right now, huh? I see my lefty low information people online blaming it on Trump. But you do realize TSA, which was started after 9/11, they have never prevented a terrorist attack. Not once. And they've not only not stopped any terrorism, but they also fail to prevent somewhere between 80 and 95% of the weapons that go through the TSA screeners. And I guess I should feel fortunate that they suck at their job, because if not, I likely would have spent a year in federal prison for what I was smuggling through there, unbeknownst to me. So I wish this mess would kind of help us realize that they're unnecessary. I mean, it was all privatized before, and we should go back to that. But I guess maybe it's a jobs program for those who can't get a better one. After all, not everybody can be a mayor, you know. All those people who stood in line for 5 hours and still missed their flight, they should have just let them through. They should have just risked it. No terrorist was going to show up at the airport during all this shutdown and wait in line for 5 hours, not knowing if he's going to make the flight he plans to fly into a building. Yeah, he's not going to wait that long to do some hijacking. The Muhammad Attas of the world, if they wanted to do some hijacking, I'm pretty sure they would have just waited till the government was funded. But if not, they should do what the Israelis do. That was the toughest security I ever had to go through there in London, which is also a pain, but they profile people in Israel. So how about this? If you're a military-aged man, you have to go through security. Everybody else, very quick, just walk through a metal detector or something. And it sucks for you young fellas that you're military-aged, but we call that taking one for the team. And they should understand. It's always bothered me that people are so opposed to profiling. It's just another one of the downsides of the feminization of America. If I were military aged or had the same skin tone as most terrorists, I would understand. I'd have no problem allowing everybody else to make their flight while me and my demographic miss ours. It's just the way, it's just more efficient. Don't make everybody miss their flight because grandma's got to be screened. It's ridiculous and it's inefficient. If middle-aged white guys start jacking planes and flying them into buildings, and you want to start screening guys who look like me, if I have to take an extra 10 minutes to be extra screened, that's fine. I get it. Or if Catholics start doing terrorism, whatever. But leftists should be fine with it too. It's just common sense, which unfortunately leftists don't have. And yeah, it's just terrible. Our many communist infiltrationists are slowing us down for their agenda. Think about this. Why can't an ICE agent identify as a TSA agent, since they're cool with identifying as something you're not? What would be more ridiculous, a man identifying as a woman or an ICE agent identifying as a TSA agent? How much training would a TSA agent need? Because I'm pretty sure it could be covered in a lunch and learn. I'll even buy the pizza. In the grape soda. Just kidding. That was in the Epstein files. Probably code words. Bring the pizza and grape soda. What else is in the news? How about this bachelorette scandal going on? You see that, where ABC, which is probably the worst of the three-letter networks, rivaled only by NBC. Because at least CNN has Scott Jennings. But they selected this hard six with a party voice. She's got that raspy smoker's voice, divorced mother of three, to be the bachelorette. What are they doing? Are they warming us up because they're planning to have a disabled transsexual next and they want us to be prepared? So they're going to make the bachelorettes less and less appealing? Think about what would the equivalent bachelor be? Would it be some dude named Larry who doesn't like kids and said he played defensive tackle on varsity in high school, so he's got the patches down his jacket and always seems to be between jobs? Or he's a strip club DJ who divorced his first wife, Crystal, with a K? Because, I don't know. But just before this bachelorette season, in case you didn't see it, before it was set to air, there was a video leaked of this woman, the bachelorette, being physically abusive. And what is her name? I have it here. Taylor Frankie Paul. I've heard of girls having boys' names, and I actually kind of like it. Like Charlie or Ryan. Those are good examples. But if you have three boy names for one girl, yeah, that should have been your first red flag. So after she was busted, after this video leaked of her throwing a bar stool at her ex, and I'm not sure, did it hit the kid or something? I'm not sure. I don't know. But right on cue, as we all expected, she hit the interview circuit so that she could apologize, so that she'd be accountable. Because good women are just like good men. They're going to be accountable. We're the same, right? I'm just kidding. But you knew that. No, she portrayed herself as the victim. Of course, she threw out a bunch of... It's a terrible interview. She threw out a bunch of likes and you knows. And honestly, probably she probably said honestly three times. And a couple of times said, I won't lie to you. You know, the way honest people speak. I mean, would you even listen to this pod if I didn't preface everything I said with honestly or let me tell you the truth? All right, let's do money stuff. I've got some money stuff to talk about. U.S. household net worth, according to a chart shared by Mr. Bellello, who I went over his newsletter last week, U.S. household net worth was up 9% in 2025. So in total, it's a record $175 trillion, which is more than double what it was a decade ago. And that's because over that period, home values are up 88% over the last 10 years, and U.S. stock prices are up 298%. So rounding up, that's a 100% return versus a 300% return. And if you're a real estate investor, you have worked a lot harder to generate your 88% than equity investors have done in the work they've put in to get 298%. It makes you wish you'd put all your money in the market instead of buying real estate, am I right? Hindsight isn't 2020. It's more like Ted Williams' vision. He had near perfect vision, 2010. Can you believe that? He had near perfect vision. You know who has the best vision in the world? Any guess? It's baseball players. There's some good stories in a book called The Sports Gene by David Epstein. In the book, he cites a study that was done by an ophthalmologist. He studied 400 major leaguers over the course of 4 years, and the average visual acuity of these 400 players chosen at random was 20 over 13. Unbelievable. I remember Chase wearing contacts in high school, and I'm sure that helped him be a better hitter, but I was too soon old, too late smart on that. And he has told me that he tries to convince management in the Rangers organization to pay more attention to vision, players' vision. My vision has taken a nosedive just in the last few years. I now need glasses to see my phone, which is not good. I don't know if it's my neck doing that or getting older or what. But speaking of hitting a baseball, did you know that men have a superior ability to women to detect and track fast-moving objects? Whereas women are better at distinguishing colors, and that's because men have a higher sensitivity to things like rapid motion, and it's because of our M cells in our retinas or something. We have a higher concentration of M cells, and there are other neurons that we have in the visual cortex that evidently women don't have, or they're not as sensitive or something. But yeah, bring back that DEI program for pilots, would you? Real smart. The S&P 500 is down 7.6% from its January all-time high. Each of the past 3 years had bigger declines than what we're experiencing right now. Last year, the markets dropped 18.9% during all the tariff talk. That was April of 25, Liberation Day, they called it. In all three of the past years, the market has recovered in a big way. So hopefully we see it come back. Unless you're young, you want the market to tank so that you have more time to invest at lower prices. Whether a recovery happens soon, it kind of seems to depend on what crude oil does, which I talked a little bit about last week, ticker USO. And of course, what's going to happen with Iran. Some say Iran was charging every barrel of oil that came through. They were charging a VIG of $5 a barrel or something. So if we're able to wrestle control of the Strait of Hormuz, then we may see a huge reduction in what we pay at the pump. Since the war in Iran started, commodity prices have gone through the roof here. Gasoline is up 44%, fertilizer up 23%. Hell, even rice is up 7% in the last 3 or 4 weeks. The price of gas, well, it hasn't been this high since April 22. So inflation expectations are having a downward impact on stocks and bonds. Both are not doing well since this war started. Do you know Argentina still has 33% inflation? That is wild. I think it's down from maybe 70-something percent since Milei took office. Turkey is second in the world with their inflation rate being high. It's 32%. I was in Turkey last summer, and I found that prices were about the same as what they are in the U.S. So I reckon in years past, they were super cheap before all the inflation. Of course, I wasn't buying a car or a house or anything. Energy stocks are killing. So they're up 33% since the start of the war. The energy ETF ticker is XLE. You know, some of the previous spikes in oil that we've had, like in 2000, which is right around the peak of the dot-com hysteria, mania, just before we spiraled into recession in 01, the oil prices spiked. And then again in 07, 08, during that recession, crude oil shot up to, I believe it was $147 a barrel, and then a recession followed shortly thereafter. Any of you shop at Costco? I, as you know, am a huge fan, but did you know their Kirkland signature brand? I used to buy that coffee. I've been buying the donut brand lately, but the Kirkland signature brand is perfectly acceptable to me. That's their home team brand, Kirkland. I mean, you might as well call it Costco, but it's called Kirkland. They did, the Kirkland signature brand, $90 billion in revenue last year. That is more than Boeing, FedEx, T-Mobile, Procter & Gamble, Wells Fargo, just to name a few. So, the Costco CEO just said that they want to get into razors soon, which they're in electric. He said electronics too, but the razors one is most interesting to me because there are a lot of guys who've tried to get into razors, especially after seeing Gillette go woke in 2019. You remember they had a commercial where it was like, "We believe the best man can be, and the best that men can be is not being toxically masculine," and they touched on all the Me Too stuff, and I hadn't bought anything Gillette since then, nor have I drank a Bud Light for that matter, or considered driving a Jaguar. All those go woke, go broke, that is a truism. Costco just rolled out a Kirkland brand energy drink, which I'm sure is going to put a hurting on Celsius. Their stock fell just 6% on that Costco announcement alone. So ticker CELH is Celsius. What else? So I'll give you a parenting tip. Parenting tip of the week. If you have young ones or you plan to have young ones, you know, for me, it's really cool to be part of the phase of life that the guys I coach are in now. Cause most of them are either getting married, just got married, or they're having kids or trying to have kids. And so what a joy for me to get to be a part of that, you know, on the periphery. But I do interact with them all the time. So One of them's getting married in May in Charleston, South Carolina, and I've never been to Charleston, so I'm looking forward to that. I need to put together a speech. Maybe you could send me some speech tips as I give you one about parenting. So I had a little talk with my girl over the weekend, my five-year-old, and it was about what to do if you get lost. And we have already had her memorize our address and phone numbers, but this time I wanted to build on that a little bit and tell her what specifically to look for if she can't find us somewhere or she's lost or whatever. So I told her, if you're lost, you look for a mommy because mommies are the best helpers. And she got that. She understood. But what I told her next made her cry. But I actually think that's a good thing. When the emotion is high, what I say is more likely to stick. That's how I look at it anyway. And it feels terrible in the moment, but much of parenting is that way. You're saying or doing something that hurts them in the short term. By the way, not just them. Like when you punish your kid, it hurts you. Oftentimes you're punishing yourself too. And in this instance, I had to watch tears running down her cheeks. And so it hurt me to share this, but I hope the benefit outweighs the cost. So I just covered with her what to do if she were to get lost. Look for a mommy. And then I said, if a man you don't know tries to take you with him, you start screaming. And that's when she started crying. But I said it again, because repetition is the mother of learning. And she said, what if nobody hears me? And I said, you keep screaming. And that made her very upset to think about. Then I asked her a minute later, I said, what do you do if you get lost? And she said, I don't want to think about it. And she started to get upset. So, uncomfortable conversations, but make it a rule to have those in your life often, especially with your kids. I've got a good kid say the darndest things this week. You want to hear it? So, my girls were upstairs dancing, and which I didn't know that that's what they were doing upstairs. But after a while, the wife comes down and she's sitting there on the couch, and then here comes my little one. And she's got two $1 bills in her hands. So she's got this safe and she loves to take money out and do whatever with it. A lot of times she brings it with her when we go to get something and she wants to pay. But she waves the dollar bills at my wife and says, this is for you because you're such a good dancer. So we had a good laugh about that. Let me give you a health update on me since a few of you have asked. I had a nerve study done. This was last Monday. And it's an EMG, they call it, electromyography. And it's not fun, but it's also not terribly bad. They shock your nerves, and it had my whole body jumping off the table, at least the first few times, but you kind of get used to it. But it's still just not, it's not pleasant. But after about 10 shocks, you get used to it. And they did a muscle study, which is a thin needle, kind of like acupuncture, except they move the needle around and you're supposed to flex, and that's also doesn't feel good. But these studies were ordered by a pain management doctor who I was sent to by the neurosurgeon because they're trying to pinpoint exactly what's causing this chronic neck pain that I've been dealing with for too long. So it's been narrowed down. I had a fresh MRI in February. The last one I'd had before that was in August in Poland. But it was hard for doctors here to translate. Plus, I was in a car crash in December. Remember me telling you I got rear-ended at a red light? And I felt worse since then. So the doctor wanted me to get a new MRI and x-ray. And it's looking like I have bone spurs and bulging discs and pinched nerves and muscle spasms. But other than that, I'm good. But I'm attacking it now. I go back to the doctor next Monday. And I got the results of the nerve study and the muscle study. And I put them into AI. But you know, a lot of it's over my head, so I'll wait for the doctor to interpret it for me. But no travel plans until I get this right. All right, let me leave you with this. It's Warren Buffett's test to determine whether you live a blessed life. So he suggests the following thought experiment. He says, assume that every human on Earth currently alive, all 8 billion souls on Earth, is a marble placed in a jar. If given the opportunity, would you put your marble in with the others, shake up the jar, then take another marble at random and live that person's life instead? If the answer to that question is no, then you have a blessed life. And even beyond that, if you put all 100 billion people who've ever lived in the jar, you definitely wouldn't even shake it up. You wouldn't even be willing to touch that jar, I imagine. You know, like, the odds of you getting John D. Rockefeller are not good, or Genghis Khan, or whoever. Seneca. So, thank y'all for your continued prayers as it relates to my neck and your support. And if I can do anything for you, please holler at your boy. And until next time, God bless y'all. Thank you for listening.